Thank you, Yuri. This is joint work with Steve Schlosser from Intel Research Pittsburgh, Lori Kraner at Carnegie Mellon, and of course, my advisor, Greg Ganger. So as promised, today we're going to talk about home data users. So we talked a lot about enterprise users so far. Let's talk a little bit about average people, normal people, not you or I. So since we're going to talk about home users, let's start with a real life example of some home users. This is a household I interviewed over the last couple of months. It's five roommates who all live together, and they all have various computing devices. Now, Carol, who is the roommate in the middle here in the blue, has a desktop machine compared to her roommates who all have laptops. And on that desktop, she has some nicer speakers. So they like to listen to music on the desktop when they listen to music, as opposed to listening to it on their teeny little laptop speakers. So let's look at a hypothetical scenario. Perhaps Mary, who's our Eagles fan over here in the Eagles sweatshirt, would like to have some U2 songs playing as background for the next party that they host. So she'd like to make sure that the U2 files on her laptop end up getting copied onto Carol's desktop so that they can listen to them there. So let's step through what exactly Mary would do to make this happen. So Mary would start by bringing up iTunes because that's how she accesses her files. So if we look at iTunes, iTunes is a semantic interface. So what do I mean by that? Well, in iTunes we have all of our files sitting here, and each of those files are tagged with name value pairs, things like author and album and name and genre, whatever else you might think of. And Mary can go search for various files here, so she can search for particular files by U2, say. And Mary, once she has a result, can also order these results based on a name or an album, again, any of those attributes that she'd like to look at. So let's start our search. So Mary has done a search. She's found all of her U2 files. Now all she needs to do is figure out where those files are stored and then be able to copy them over onto a USB dongle. So let's see what she's going to do. So first she'll find some file. Maybe she'll find just the first file here, because why not? And then she'll click on it. She'll find a way to look at the information. She'll bring up a menu which will show her the information. Down at the bottom of the information, you can see it actually shows her where it's stored in the file system. Then from there, she'll open up the Finder. She'll find the folder in the Finder. Then she'll take that folder, find the parent folder of the Finder, find all of the items that are in that parent folder. Then go back to her original interface, figure out which files she's found, check those off of her list, then go back and find a file she hasn't found yet, because there may be multiple locations where all these data files are stored. Look at another file, click on this file, go back down again, find the options menu, go into the options menu, find where it's stored, go open the browser, find the browser folder, take that folder, find the parent folder of that folder, find all of the data that's within that folder, and then go back and figure out which files she's found. And if she's very, very lucky, at the end of this process, she'll have found all of the U2 files in her system. And if she's not lucky, or is more like me, she'll find most, but maybe not all, of the U2 files that she actually wanted to copy over. Whew. That's a little complicated. So, and remember here, we haven't even got to any tool that might actually let her copy said files from her laptop over onto the desktop. So what got so complicated about this? This was just a simple task of taking some files in the iTunes music library and then copying them onto a different device. So the problem here is that we have a naming mismatch between the application, which is iTunes, and the management tool that she's using, which in this case is the Finder. So the application uses semantic naming. It has files tagged with name value pairs, and then she can do search and ordering on those files. In contrast, the Finder, like most file system management tools these days, is very tightly bound to a hierarchical namespace. It assumes that the way the data is named is in a hierarchical file structure. So the problem is that there's a mismatch. There are two different naming schemes, and Mary has to convert from one to the other in order to accomplish her task. Notice this isn't just an interface problem. It's not just that they had, you know, different interfaces. It's actually a systemic problem in the system itself. The particular problem is an example of a variety of problems that we're going to want to try and tackle here in the home. So the big problem for a lot of these challenges is management. So we're not talking about performance here. We're not talking about reliability or scalability. The big thing we're focusing on is how to make this manageable for a lay user, for someone who is not a tech guru. So problems can occur when the system, which provides functionality, is dissociated from what it is the end users really want to do. And in this particular case, you can see the problem isn't necessarily with iTunes or with the Finder itself. It's the file system is providing an abstraction which doesn't match the way the user is dealing with their data. And in these kind of scenarios, even simple tasks like finding out where something is stored can become very complicated. So in order to tackle this problem, we're going to have to take a slightly different approach from what we've generally had in the systems field. So we want to attack problems in the system itself, but we want to attack them from the angle of manageability or usability. So what we're going to do is we're going to use an amalgamation of HCI techniques with traditional systems research. So in order to tackle this problem, we went through three different steps. first step was exploring what it is home users actually need. What is Mary trying to do? What kind of data are they dealing with, and what are they trying to do with it? We then took that information and used it to build a prototype file system called Perspective, which addressed the management concerns that we found in our studies. And finally, we tested Perspective's usability in a lab study to see whether it really was easier for end users to use than other systems. So throughout my talk, I will talk about each of these three points. So the first point here is exploring what it is home users want. What do they need? So what we did is we used a well-known HCI technique called a contextual analysis. So in this contextual analysis, we do in-situ semi-structured interviews. So these are interviews with people in their homes with a set of questions to start conversation, and then we kind of let the conversation flow from there to see what things are interesting to the people and what challenges may come up. Now, let me stress, this is not just me going and talking to a couple of my buddies. This is actually a rigorous HCI technique. So we interviewed 24 people across 8 households, and we asked them general questions about data management. We also asked them very specific questions about what devices and what data they stored and what their preferences were about reliability for that data. So an example question that we asked them was, we asked them to describe the last time they backed up their data and kind of walk us through the procedure that they did in order to back up this information. So there's a lot of information that came out of this contextual analysis, but let me hit some of the highlights here. So these are core home data management tenets, if you will, core things that we observed across the different people that we interviewed. The first is that users are familiar with semantic naming. As I've described previously, the preponderance of home user interfaces are semantic in nature. Things like iTunes or iPhoto, Picasa, email, they're all semantic and not hierarchical. Second, we found that home devices were very decentralized and dynamic. So while users didn't necessarily have large numbers of devices at any one given time, the devices changed rapidly and the boundaries between them were very porous. So what ended up happening is anything which required some sort of central control was swept away. So for example, one of our households actually was quite impressive for a non-technical user, had set up a home server in his home and used that home server to transfer files from device to device. But as soon as he had to upgrade that home computer, he didn't reconfigure it and it was gone and he lost that functionality because he didn't want to go through the effort of reconfiguring it. So it was swept away in this dynamic environment that we find in the home. So users also required control over automation. So much like system administrators in the enterprise setting, they weren't happy with tools they didn't understand and couldn't figure out what they did. So for example, we found that the majority of our users did some sort of backup of their data, but almost none of them used any kind of automated tool, so any kind of tool at all for backup. Instead, they just copy their files by hand. When we asked them why, they said, well, I don't understand what the tool does. I don't trust that it's actually doing what I want. So it's easier for me to just go do it by hand than to trust some tool that does it for me. So while automation is important in the home and will help us solve some problems, it's not a panacea. We need to make sure that users can understand what's going on. We also found that users in general place data infrequently and explicitly. So what I mean by that is they choose a set of data, say last semester's files, and say that those should be located on a particular device, say my laptop. And they'd only occasionally revisit those decisions as things might change. This is in contrast to a more prefetching style approach where someone might guess what it is they'd want over the next couple days and then put that data on their device. Finally, we found that users were very price conscious. No surprise, I'm sure, to anyone who's been in the home space. But notice that this is well before the fall 2008 economic crisis. So even outside of that, people were concerned about the cost. And we found that people people were very concerned about high utilization of their devices. And many people would adopt management paradigms which they knew were more complex and more cumbersome, but they did because they didn't want to spend the money for extra hard drive space. So disk space may be getting cheaper, but it's still not cheap to a home user. So these core tenets are going to drive the design of the file system and drive the rest of this talk. So now that I've talked about those core observations, let's talk about our Perspective file system. So Perspective is a prototype file system which addresses the management problems we found. It's aimed in particular at home data management. So Perspective addresses the core tenets I just described in a variety of design decisions. So the first design decision we made is that Perspective is a peer-to-peer system. So there's no central control. All devices are equal, if you will. And we believe this captures the dynamic and decentralized nature of the devices we found in our studies. Second, Perspective allows users to manage data semantically. So I'm not talking about locating data, although that is an important goal. I'll leave that to Andrew, who's doing a great job. But I'm going to talk about how people can do things like set reliability policies on these semantic groupings. Perspective also provides rule-based data placement, so users can set a rule as to where data should be stored, and the system makes sure both existing and new data is automatically placed correctly according to that rule. And finally, we are going to provide a layer for transparent automation, so a way for automation tools to perform things on behalf of the user while still giving the user a human-readable description of what it is they're doing and an ability to change that. So in addition to addressing these management concerns, Perspective provides what you would expect from any distributed file system, because that's indeed what Perspective is. So like most distributed file systems, Perspective is going to provide a global namespace, so data is readable and writable from any accessible device at any time. And you can search for data from any device on any device in your home. Files are accessible via Fuse, so we can do a user-level implementation. So they're accessible from unmodified applications, just like you'd access any other file in any other file system. Perspective also provides eventual consistency, so any replica of any file can be modified at any time, and the system guarantees that eventually all replicas of a file will converge to the same version. We do this without requiring a topology, so the devices can communicate with each other in a way they see fit without an enforced server-client model, for example. We, of course, can have conflicts if people modify things concurrently, just like in other previous systems, and we handle them in a similar way to what you'd expect from Bayou or Coda or those kinds of systems in the past. So the fundamental management primitive of Perspective is a view, and a view enables Perspective to provide all of these design decisions at the same time. So a view specifies what files are stored on any given device. So it uses a semantic query to specify a group of files, and then Perspective will guarantee that the files which match the query for the view are then stored on the device in the view. So when I say semantic query, I mean, just like Andrew's been talking about, a query on named value pairs. So it could be something like all files where album is the white album, or something where all of the files that have the task taxes and are after some given date were created after some given date. So we are assuming that there's rich metadata here. In the home, we are blessed with the fact that many of the data items home users use already have rich metadata. We can incorporate the data that users use themselves, and there are a lot of smart people working on making that better as it goes forward in the future. So again, let me stress, views allow users to use queries to manage data, so they can set, both users and tools can set data placement and fault tolerance guarantees on these groupings. It's not about search, per se. So let me show you in the next little bit of the talk how it is views allow Perspective to provide the design decisions we mentioned. So first, let me give you a sense of how views help structure the underlying system and provide the standard distributed file system characteristics. To do so, let me show you how views allow the system to route updates from device to device. So let's start with an example of four devices here, and we're going to put a bunch of views onto these devices. So throughout this talk, the little blue square is going to be a view. You can see there's two parts to the view. The first is the device the data is stored on, and the second is a semantic query which specifies what files are stored there. So for example, this is Brian's laptop, so Brian's laptop may have all files that are owned by Brian stored on that laptop. But Mary may have a cell phone, and she may be more concerned. There's not a lot of space there, so she only puts things that are her address book on the cell phone. However, in contrast, the desktop is a large machine. It's always plugged in. It has lots of space. So maybe the family decides that all files should go there, so there should be a copy of all files there. And on the DVR, to make sure that they can watch TV even though the computer may be turned off, they'll put a copy of the TV files there. And they might also put some shared family files there so that those pictures or photos, for example, might be accessible there. So you can see the views here are actually a concise and precise definition of exactly where files are stored on the system. So what we're going to do is we're going to copy all of the views in the devices in the household onto each device. Since there's a small number, about 30 in the experiments we've done so far, or the interviews we've done so far, and these views themselves are very small, this is doable even on a small device like, say, a cell phone or an iPod. Once each device has a copy of all of the views, the device can use that information to route updates as they come into the system. So for example, Brian might go to the iTunes store and download a new episode of a TV show he likes, for example. By looking at the views, the laptop can tell which devices need to be informed of this new file in the system. But the same thing would happen for an update. So in this case, we can see it should go on the desktop since everything goes there, and it should also go on the DVR since it's a typed TV show. So the important thing to notice here is that we don't have to bother Mary's cell phone. This is critical because Mary's cell phone has limited battery life, and if it has to wake up every time I do an update on my laptop, it's going to run out of battery very quickly. So we can also use this approach to limit the cost of synchronizations and also to direct searches to the appropriate devices. And details on our eventual consistency algorithm, how we provide that, and also on search in perspective are available in the paper. If you'd like to look at that, please do. But the most important thing about perspective is the way, or views, is the way they facilitate data management. So let me talk about how views provide the features that we need for our core tenets that we talked about before. So to illustrate how perspective meets these design points, let's go through a simple example with Mary. So let's say Mary has two devices here. She has a laptop and she has a desktop. Let's walk through some examples so that we can see how views might be used to manage that data. So first, again, we have a view which Mary can put on her laptop. And so this, is rule-based data placement. So Mary can specify, say, that all of my files should be stored on the laptop, and the system will assure that all files, both currently and that might be created in the future, will be stored on that particular device. However, these descriptions of files are done in a semantic fashion, which means we aren't tied to a hierarchy in the way we group data. This means that Mary can manage her data in the same way she's used to browsing it from her applications, and it also means that automation tools can do flexible decisions on her behalf while using the exact same language she's been using to describe where things live. So for example, Mary might be working on a project right now and start running short of disk space on her laptop. An automation tool on her laptop might notice she's short on space, that there's lots of space on the desktop, and ask her whether it's all right if it offloads some of the older files off of the laptop automatically onto the desktop to free up some space. And Mary, who's in the midst of doing a project, might say, yes, that's fine, go ahead. I want to be able to finish my project and go ahead and do that. So that automation tool can make this change by simply modifying the views and say that all of Mary's new files are stored on her laptop while all of her older files, say before a certain date, are stored on the desktop. And again, Perspective will make sure files are copied correctly in the background, that we don't lose any updates, and that that's all done on her behalf. However, by having the automation tool interact with the same language as she does and in a semantic and hopefully user-readable fashion, we've provided a way that Mary can understand and affect the changes done on her behalf by the automation tool. So after she's finished her project, she may decide she's not super happy with the way the automation tool has divided her data. Say, for example, she wants to make sure all of her music is on her laptop, whether it's old or new, and she can go with some other tool and modify the views so that she says, perhaps I'd also like all of my music on my laptop, please. And perhaps I have a lot of space on my desktop, so let's just go ahead and put all of my files there and not just the old ones. And again, the system will do the updates in the background. So we've provided all of this functionality without breaking the property that we still have loosely coupled devices. So as devices leave and enter the household, we don't have to reconfigure the other devices in the house. So this becomes important when we talk about upgrade and failure cases. So for example, Mary might go on a trip, and while she's on her trip, perhaps she drops her laptop, heaven forbid, and loses all the data on the drive. So the laptop is broken. She goes and buys a new laptop and puts it at her home. We've made it seamless for her to be able to add this new device. As long as her data is stored on some other device so that she didn't lose it, the system doesn't require any reconfiguration. In fact, the desktop, as you recall, keeps a copy of all of the views that used to be on her old laptop, and so the new laptop can simply find those views, resurrect them, if you will, on the new laptop, and she's off and running. The system will copy all the correct files onto her laptop, and she has a new laptop that's set up with the same data as her old laptop. So this is a nice story. It all sounds very good in this little story, but the question is whether this really works with real non-technical users in real data tasks. So that's our next step. Let's talk about that. So here we took perspective when we tested it in a lab setting to see if it really was more usable than a conventional approach. So our usability evaluation is trying to answer the question, is view-based management any easier than more conventional approaches, things like directory management or volume-based management? So what we did is a between-group usability lab study. So this means we brought in users and we had them use one of several sets of systems and then compared the results of how well they did with each system. We chose non-technical students and staff from nearby universities, and we tested a total of 30 users, each of which used one of the systems that we tested. And each user did 10 tasks. We did these in a Latin square ordering, which mitigates ordering effects in the order in which you give people tasks. So we need to use an interface to be able to evaluate this. Anytime we need to interact with an end user, there has to be an interface involved. But what we're trying to test is not the user interface itself, but the underlying system architecture. How usable is that for the end user? So in order to get at this problem, we used the same interface for all of the systems we tested, and we tweaked them only slightly to accommodate the underlying architecture, which would be underneath it. So we tested three different types of systems. First is the view-based system, which I've been describing so far, which uses semantic data management and is also a peer-to-peer architecture. The second was a directory-based system, which is hierarchical in the way it orders data, but is also peer-to-peer like Perspective is. And the last is perhaps a more conventional approach, a volume-based system, where we have hierarchical or sorting of data, and we also have a distinction between client and server devices. Since there isn't a current extant interface for doing these kinds of tasks, we adapted an interface which was originally developed to modify file permissions in a hierarchical setting by the usable privacy and security lab at CMU. So this is what the interface looks like. It's called an expandable grids interface. So along the left side of our interface, we have groups of files. The details aren't necessarily super important here. But you have different groups of files, and you can expand or contract each entry, and it will expand or contract the corresponding entries in the grid. Across the top of the interface, we have all of the devices in the household. So each device in the household is a single column. And the values in our grid, each grid square represents whether the files in the row are stored on the device in the column. So a dark blue square means all of the files are stored there. A light blue square means some but not all of the files are stored there. And a white square means none of the files are stored here. There's also a special column which summarizes the failure protection properties of the data. So in this case, we chose to keep it simple. It simply shows whether there are two full copies of this particular set of data in the system, and therefore whether it would be tolerant of a single device failing in the household. Now, the user, by clicking on any of these squares, can affect a change. You can tell the system to place new data there or remove data off of the system. So this allows them to modify the views. And we use the same interface for all three of our systems, just tweaking it to accommodate the differences in the underlying system slightly. So we had the user perform a variety of different types of tasks. The first were a set of data organization tasks. So these tasks test the mismatch between semantic and hierarchical systems, as I described earlier in my talk. So the applications we gave the user, iTunes and iPhoto, were semantic-based, and therefore the view-based system, which provides semantic management, requires minimal mapping to go from the application into the file system construct itself. In contrast, the directory and volume-based systems are tied to the hierarchical namespace and therefore require the user to do the mapping, which I showed you at the beginning of the talk. So I've given you an example task here. Mary and Brian share music at home. However, when Mary is on trips, she finds that she can't listen to all the songs by U2 on her laptop. Make sure she can listen to all music by the artist U2 on her trip. So this would be displayed to the user along with one of our systems, the interface for one of our systems, and they would have to perform the task. So let's look at some results from the study. So across the bottom of our graph here, we have the different tasks the users performed. And the details of them aren't necessarily important, but they're all of a similar flavor to the task I just showed you. And at the end, we, of course, have an average of all of the tasks together. Along the y-axis, we have the percentage of users which correctly completed the task. So higher is better in this case, right? So first, let's look at the results for the view-based system. So an average of 66% of the users got these tasks correct, and you can see that some of the tasks were more complex than others, and so there's a variation in how many got each task correct. However, if we compare that to the directory system, only 14% of the users got tasks correct in the directory-based system because of the complexity of doing this mapping. And you can again see there's, you know, some variation in how complicated they are. So the takeaway from this graph is that users found the semantic model easier to work with than the hierarchical model. And there was a big difference here, 66% right versus 14% right. We also had users perform a set of tasks which tested whether they understood and could manipulate around the distinctions between clients and servers. So again, in this case, we have tasks along the bottom along with an average. And we have accuracy, or percentage of users that got a task correct along the y-axis. And we'll look at two different systems. So we'll start with a view-based system. Almost all people got the tasks correct in this case, because besides the client-server distinction, they were fairly easy tasks. So 95% got it right. Only a single user got it wrong. If we compare that to the volume-based system, however, it's a very different story. Only 15% of the users got it correct in this case. So the takeaway from this is that users found a peer-to-peer model more readily understandable than a client-server distinction that was difficult for them to get right. So we also provided them with other sets of tasks. For example, we provided them with tasks which had clear but tedious mappings between the semantic system and the hierarchical system, say music playlists or photo albums. So in this case, the accuracy didn't measure or didn't change substantially, but the completion time varied quite a bit. So the view-based system, people took about 70 seconds, about a minute to perform the tasks, whereas in the directory case, they took 428 seconds to perform that same task. And the file system performance, while performance of the file system itself is not a goal for us, clearly it has to be feasible to implement in practice or nobody's going to use it. So the performance of the Perspective prototype is adequate for day-to-day use. It stored my data for about a year and a half, been the only storage location for my data. And it's been running several multi-tuner DVRs over the last six months to a year. And the latency is acceptable for day-to-day use, and throughput is decent for enough to be able to watch HDTV on a DVR. So in conclusion, I presented some results of an analysis of home management tasks. And we found that two key points were that the environment is decentralized and dynamic, and that users are used to semantic interfaces, and there's a disconnect between the tools that they have to use. So Perspective is a file system which addresses these problems by providing semantic peer-to-peer management practices. And we have user studies which show an up to 6x gain in accuracy of performing simple management tasks with non-technical home users. So that's the end of my talk. I'll take any questions.
Michael McThrow from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo.
Hi, Michael.
And so I have a question related to the views. Mm-hmm. And so I understand based on the iTunes example and also the examples you gave with your experiments saying about how users were able to find files and get through Tasca much more efficiently with views. However, one question that has been sticking in my head is when users create files. Like, for example, say you open a text editor or Microsoft Word or something and you create a document or you create a spreadsheet. Most users seem to work in either two ways. They stick every document that they create within a folder, like projects, English, or they just stick it in the user directory. And so I wonder. It's not really a research question, but I wonder when you're creating files in the view, is everything being dumped to a store, or when you create a file, is there some sort of structure, kind of like how in Andrew Leung's paper there was a sort of subtree structure. How are files organized in this file system?
Sure. So a semantic system is actually a superset of a hierarchy. Mm-hmm. So you can express a hierarchy, and you can build hierarchies inside of perspectives using semantic tags. So when you go to create a spreadsheet, you actually would create it in a directory just like you would in a standard hierarchical system. It's just that would be, in our case, we're using faceted metadata, which allows us to kind of map a semantic system into a hierarchical looking system. So when I say semantic data, think both the standard stuff you'd think of in terms of, you know, MP3 tags and things like that, but also things like this is my Italy folder, or these are my documents folder, or my taxes folder. This is the equivalent of a folder in a semantic system. It's actually a little more flexible, actually, if you will. And then the backing store is done. You can do the backing store however you like. In our case, it's an object store.
Okay. Are the changes of these folders...
Actually, just one question, please. We have lots of questions behind you.
Sorry, feel free to come talk to me afterwards. I'd love to chat with you then.
Okay, thank you.
In the back, please.
Steven Speckman, Quantum. So you gave the example about you run out of space and you partition your files between two places. I'm a little bit concerned about the amount of Boolean algebra that users have to do in order to avoid deleting their files. I'm sure if I tried to do that task before my first coffee, I'd put in the constraints in the wrong order and everything would go away. What do you do about this?
Yes, that's a great question. So it's a detail I didn't have chance to talk about here, but there are three simple distributed permanence rules that guarantee no matter how you modify the views, you'll never drop a file. So even if I remove a view so that there is no view containing a file right now, the system will never drop that file. It'll hold on to it until it finds a home for it, and then we'll put it there. So you can guarantee that no matter how the views are changed from wherever in whatever order, files are never lost.
And people still find that intuitive?
In what sense?
They're not baffled by having this hidden automation layer that's storing things in places they think they didn't ask for?
I'm not sure how to answer the question. No, I haven't sensed that people are. But perhaps there's more to your question
right.
than your...
I should give someone else a chance to speak.
Yeah, we'll talk offline. Please come talk to me. Yeah.
Daniel Margot, Harvard University.
Hi, Daniel.
So your system is dependent on the accurate labeling of content by users and creators. So two tightly coupled questions. One is, do you have a sense that users, when they make files, you know, are really capable of pre-labeling it with the right terms such that they'll be able to retrieve it later properly? Do people really do that? And second, what happens in the case when, for example, Mary uses iTunes to download a specific album, say the White Album, mm-hmm. and then later one day she decides to use Amazon MP3 to download songs from the same album, and for
right.
some reason Amazon MP3's tags are a little out of sync with iTunes tags, you know, maybe
right.
the hyphen is in a different place. Is she frustrated because now her data is being sorted all wrong because she couldn't write the right semantic rule to cover both cases?
All right, so I think there were two kind of questions in there. The first is, do we require people to have comprehensive tagging? No. Actually, I think this is an, remember, we're talking about management here and not about location, so location is a separate concern. But in terms of management, people in general use quite coarse-grained things. You're not in general going to do something very specific. It'll be things more like all of my documents or all of my music files. So I don't believe we require comprehensive tagging. Now, of course, it's a problem. I mean, anytime you talk about any system, I'd argue that it's no different in a directory-based system than a semantic system. If I didn't choose the right volume to put my file in, it's not going to be replicated correctly. What we're giving the people is just a more flexible abstraction. If they mislabel things, yes, they mislabel things, just as the problem would exist in a hierarchical file system. And there was a second part to your question, which was out-of-sync tags. I mean, we're not doing anything special to handle that. Yeah, that would be annoying, just like it would be if you did it in a hierarchical system. You'd have two directories. As a matter of fact, I do REM without a final dot and REM with a final dot, for example, which is kind of annoying to me. But that's a separate question that would be interesting to address.
Okay, I'd like to talk to you after.
Yeah, please. Come talk to me. Andrew, how's it going?
Hey, Andrew Leung, UCSC. I was just wondering on your results, you had examples where your users were still only getting 60% accuracy or so. What was it that they were finding difficult? Was it the interface or the abstractions or...
So, I mean, some of it is the interface. The interface, I think, one of the things that's good to, one thing that's good about it is once people are familiar with it, they find it very powerful, but it is a little overwhelming at first because it provides tons of information. There's also, just to be honest, a lot of people, the notion of anything that's hierarchical, and even in the semantic case in here, you have kind of things that you can expand. A lot of people have trouble with the idea that you can click on things and expand them. So I found a very strong correlation, for example, between the deepness in a hierarchy you need to go and how accurately people could do that. And so there's still some percentage of people that just, when you know, faced with something that they could click on things and expand, didn't know how to expand it and would kind of just say, well, okay, I'll try and do something and see what happens.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem.
Let's take our speaker, please.
Thanks.